Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:19 p.m. Today is September 13th, and there's plenty to talk about in here today. Well, the first is that the USA is now looking increasingly likely that it is the biggest producer of crude oil. I apologize for this malware bites thing that keeps popping up. I can't seem to get rid of it, and I haven't been able to figure out exactly what's going on. But I'll persist nonetheless. When we look at the trend on Saudi Arabian, Russian, and U.S. Oil production, well, we can see, for example, that Russia had really quite impressive supply growth in the early 2000s, but it has tapered off since then. They have obviously had some measures underway to stop growing their supply in conjunction with Saudi Arabia, but the big period of supply growth happened a decade ago, more like 15 years ago rather than right now. And Saudi Arabia's supply has also been relatively stable. Of course, that doesn't mean that they're not capable of increasing their supply, but because Saudi Arabia is part of OPEC, and OPEC doesn't want prices to be too low, but neither does it want prices to be particularly high, and they also have these mandates from their respective governments, then they tend to try and manage their supply. But that's not the case in privately held production for the USA. They have an incentive to produce as much as possible, and that's the trend that we've seen. US onshore production has been trending higher since about 2008, and that is a direct response to the evolution of hydraulic fracturing in conjunction with horizontal drilling. And then you also have improvements in geophysical data and the implementation of artificial intelligence on reserve data. So all of these combining factors are contributing to greater US supply growth for crude oil, and it's Bonnie Light Sweet. So that is contributing to the fact that you have a rather wide differential right now between WTI and Brent crude. There's also a more consistent pattern on Brent crude than there is on WTI. The progression of higher reaction lows needs to hold on WTI if the benefit of the doubt is to continue to be given to the upside. Well, $70 is a big Rubicon for the hydraulic fracturers, because it's about where they're making money. And it's where they can definitely start to hedge out their production far into the future. If they can get $70 for it, they'd be more than happy to do that. But Brent crude is up around the $80 area. Well, there's quite an incentive, therefore, for the USA to export some of its supply. But with news that the US is continuing to boost its supply, then that did act as a headwind in here today. Well, the price had got all the way up towards that $80 area, and when we think about the fact that it was a little bit overbought in the short term, and that it was perhaps due some consolidation, well, a little pause around the $80 area may be quite consistent. The more important point is whether it holds the $75 area. If it can do that, well, then it will look increasingly likely that this is nothing more than a pause rather than a peak. So I think oil is probably due a little pause in here, but certainly we haven't had, I don't think we've seen the end just yet of the medium term advance. Well, then in the currency markets, the Turkish Central Bank raised interest rates aggressively. And what that has now created is this, we've got a higher reaction low in the Turkish lira, or this is a lower rally high for the US dollar. And what that is beginning to, I think, raise the prospect of is that we've seen a medium-term low for the lira. That doesn't mean that the secular decline in the currency is over, but that was a very meaningful acceleration that we've seen so far this year. And what it holds out the prospect of is that we could be moving now into a more stable period for the currency, where a lot of the selling pressure has already taken place. Well, when we look at, for example, an ETF, the iShares MSCI Turkey ETF has halved this year. and it is beginning to put in some support around the 1000p level. So there is a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. It could rally by 50%, and even then it would only be encountering or beginning to test the first area of potential resistance around the lower side of that overhead trading range that persisted from 2011 onwards. So there is certainly potential for some short covering to boost returns here if the low that we've seen just recently continues to hold for the Turkish lira. And that could be the catalyst for starting to change the very aggressive selling pressure that we've seen in a number of these emerging markets. A lot of people have been looking for evidence that the low was in emerging markets. Well, I think it's too early to say that just yet with regard to the Argentine peso. It was quite a bit weaker again in here today, and it's coming back to test this 40 level. Well, interest rates are at 60%, and that is the kind of rate that compounds really rather quickly, but that is still there's still big questions outstanding about just what Argentina is going to do and how fast it can draw down its bailout funds from the IMF. And of course, what the vast majority of people will be keeping a very close eye on is what's going on in China. And we started to see the first evidence coming through today of support at the lower side of the range for the A share index. There is, I think, a greater enthusiasm that the US and China may sit down to talk before the 200 billion of additional tariffs are imposed. Well, that was certainly greeted with open arms by the H shares index in here today, and it was up in a reasonably dynamic manner. Upside follow-through tomorrow would begin to signal that we have a failed downside break, and that would increase the potential for a rally up towards the level just above 11,000. And there is a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, at least 800 or 900 points. So that does hold out the prospect of an additional rally, but it would need to sustain a move above the trend mean to really begin to confirm that we have a peak of not just short-term, or excuse me, a low of not just short-term significance, but medium-term significance. Well, enthusiasm about some thawing of relationships between the US and China also helped to boost Wall Street in early trading, and the Dow Jones held on to the majority of its advance. It's now back up to the upper side of its range, and it's looking likely that this is just a consolidation within a recovery scenario. Then, when we look at what's going on in the Nasdaq, it was up in positive territory. Well, that really belies some of the headlines that were coming through yesterday stating that the declines were being led by technology shares. There was a meaningful rally off the lows yesterday, and it followed through on the upside in here today. AMD was up in very impressive in a very impressive manner yesterday, but it has rallied so incredibly spectacularly over the course of just the last few months that it is due some consolidation at the very minimum, that this kind of acceleration does not persist indefinitely. The fact that the CEO was being interviewed yesterday and he couldn't, he's a 25-year veteran of the company and could not have been more bullish about the share. Well, that I think tells us that they have obviously got a good product and that they've got a good product line, but that there's a lot of this news is already in the price. And this share has almost, well, in fact, it has more than doubled in the last 6 months. So there's certainly room for some consolidation. But generally speaking, the fact that technology has been rather steady, and most particularly the large cap shares, the fact that Apple has rebounded from the rather tepid attitude to the release of new products yesterday, I think is a testament to the fact that they have very high-priced products that people are going to be lining up to buy for the holiday season, and that did certainly have some impact on some of the smartwatch makers, but nonetheless, Fitbit has at least stabilized in here today, and that I think suggests that in the lower priced bracket, it is probably one of the companies that is likely to do better. What I also found interesting in here today was that there was news that unemployment in South Korea is increasing. South Korea is the 11th largest economy in the world, and generally speaking, when people talk about synchronized global economic expansion, what they're talking about is the 10 largest economies. So South Korea is just outside that number, and it plays host to some of the largest manufacturing companies in the world. Well, the index has pulled back to the upper side of this underlying trading range that persisted between 2011 and 2017, and this is about where, if support is going to be found, that it needs to start to happen. But the fact that unemployment is rising in somewhere like South Korea, that's not especially good news. Well, I was looking at the trend of unemployment, and it has been largely range bound since I think it was back in 2010. Well, if the unemployment rate were to break above 4%, then that is something that would likely start to make headlines internationally, because South Korea is so very highly leveraged to the growth of the global economy that if unemployment is rising, it would likely be in response to lower factory orders. So I think what goes on in Korea is probably worth keeping an eye on. Well, when we think about perhaps the thawing of relations between China and the USA and the potential for emerging markets to be a little bit steadier, well, that holds out the prospect that gold could be doing better, but it did not follow through on the upside in here today. In fact, it was in mildly negative territory. Well, it really does need to break up and out of this short-term range in order to really demonstrate that we have a low of more than short-term significance. And silver prices were also in mildly negative territory. The progression of lower rally highs and ranges one below another remains intact. And as long as that remains the case, well, then this is still a reasonably consistent downtrend, regardless of the fact that we have a wide overextension relative to the trend mean and that the price is approximating the lows for, well, multi-year lows, I think would probably be the best way of thinking about it. Then, when we look at what's going on in Europe, the Euro Stoxx Banks Index was a little bit steadier in here today. And when we look at which were the best performing banks, well, it's some of the bigger movers. But when we look at, for example, the Commerzbank and Deutsche Bank were in the top five. They have respectively been removed from the DAX and the Euro Stoxx 50. But then you have BBVA, which has a substantial operation in Latin America, and therefore will have been feeling the pain not just from Europe, but also from the issues that are arising in Latin America. But the share is now back in the region of the lows from 2016, 2012, and 2009. So this is a natural area where we might anticipate some support starting to come through. Where we have clear weakness is in the Greek banking sector. Well, Greece has done a lot of what was required of it, but the banking sector, and it is almost universally right across the banking sector, has been deteriorating and in a pretty dynamic manner. So that is also representative of some of the risk that still is outstanding in the Eurozone. And when we look at the Greek government bond yield, it's hovering here around 4%. That's a testament to just how aggressive ECB buying has been, but the ECB won't be buying from the end of this month. So, who Who then is going to pick up the responsibility for supporting the Greek bond market? The banking sector is suggesting that they are under pressure, and this is a potential risk for Europe. Well, when we look at the Euro stocks, the broad index of Eurozone stock markets, we have had a bounce over the last five sessions, but it was not able to hold its advance in here today. And when we look at it on a weekly basis, well, there's been a progression of lower rally highs all year, and it's really just beginning to steady from the lower side of this evolving almost 18-month range. 400 has been an area of resistance on multiple occasions over the last decade, and when we look at it over a much longer term, there has been a succession of lower rally highs. So this is a rather broad pattern following the rebound we had from the beginning of 2016, and it really is for the bulls to prove that that demand can return to dominance here. I think it is very questionable whether Europe is really ready for the end of quantitative easing, and that is a question that I think stock market investors are also asking. So when we think about the fact that we have negative interest rates on approximately $8 trillion worth of bonds, the majority of those are in Europe, and that is a testament to just how powerful the ECB's buying program has been. Well, that could also then start to put upward pressure on yields if the ECB is not buying. The German 10-year is currently around 42 basis points. Well, when we look at it on a longer-term basis, it's been pretty range-bound over much of the last 19 months. And then when we think about the fact that the 2-year has been in negative territory for years now, well, that affords the German government incredible largesse that for 3.5 years they've been able to borrow. They've had people paying them to give them money. Well, it does look like the tide is beginning to turn, and that the most likely scenario is that yields will start to rise again, but they're still sharply negative. Well, obviously that is a reflection both of the risk that continues to be outstanding in Europe, but also of ECB buying, and it has the potential to be catalytic as we move out of September and into October, when the ECB will completely stop buying new bonds. Well, when we look at the commodity complex, the copper price came up to test its progression of lower rally highs, but it has not been able to sustain a move back above it. Then when we look at, for example, some of the other industrial resources, zinc prices have been coming back very sharply just about all year now. Now they're back below $2,500, and that had been an area of both support and resistance in the past. Well, it's perhaps too early yet to say that the 2,500 point level or dollar level is going to fail, but it's certainly for the bulls to prove that zinc prices can sustain a move back above it. And nickel had been the best performing of the industrial resources over the year to date, but it has pulled back below the trend mean. Now, that was an upside key reversal yesterday. We probably did not get the upside follow-through in a dynamic manner that might have really helped to stem the selling pressure in here today, but at least it's a short-term low. If it can sustain a move back above the trend mean, well, then we can chalk this down to a medium-term pullback rather than a medium-term peak. I suspect that nickel is the industrial resource that is less likely to pull back, simply because battery production is only likely to ramp up, and that the demand for nickel, not least because of Tesla's new batteries with 8:1:1 nickel to manganese to cobalt is a rather a game changer for the electric battery sector. It's best in class at the very least. Well, Tesla was in negative territory in here today, but it has bounced impressively. Now, $300 had been an area of support before. Now the question is whether it's resistance. The one I think fact that Tesla's got in its favor is that it's already spent a lot of the money necessary to build electric vehicles, whereas a lot of the other manufacturers still have a lot of spending in front of them. Then, when we look at, for example, Ford, there's the big question of whether it's going to be able to sustain the dividend, but this continues to look like a downward trending environment. Then, when we think about what it is that is helping to animate the grain and bean and the livestock market, well, they've been pulling back very sharply this year because of fears about tariffs. And soybeans were back on the lower side of their range in here today. Well, this 800 cent level is a rather impressive, or I guess it's an historic area where support has been found, but it also represents where a lot of resistance had been encountered before the big commodity bull market. Well, the USA is likely to have a record harvest this year, and that's despite the fact that a lot of soybeans have not been harvested in places like Georgia and South Carolina, and we do have a Hurricane Florence moving into that area, and there's a high likelihood that fields are going to be inundated with water. That's perhaps most more of a factor for cotton prices than anything else, and yet cotton prices were in negative territory in here today. So Hurricane Florence has been moderating. It's probably likely to drop a lot of water rather than have very high winds. When I think about the outlook for the global economy, I think that there is the realistic possibility that it is the Nasdaq is going to continue to advance, that the lead indicators for future recessions are not flashing red, and that the most likely scenario is that the clear leaders within the technology sector that are delivering on better products and better methods, and then you have also got the fact that 5G is on the cusp of being released in the USA, and that is a gateway technology for the autonomous vehicles and the Internet of Things that everyone was getting so enthused about 2 and 3 and 4 years ago. But 5G is a basic requirement to bring all of those promises to commercial reality, and it is only just on the cusp of being released. It has the potential to create the kind of digital revolution for developed economies that 4G is having for places like India, and I think still even in China. And China is also embarking upon building a 5G network, so it's certainly not going to be left behind. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.